Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm intimidated by y'all's super professional podcast so far. So.
Oh my gosh.
making me anxious.
Don't worry. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I haven't restarted my computer in probably like a month.
Excellent. I know, man. You get to see behind the curtain and it's never pretty. Yeah.
And I hope this is what y'all need to release, just this. Don't worry about whatever we're going to talk about. Just release cute. This.
The pre-call.
It's just called technical difficulties.
Now the professionalism starts, Jason.
Now entering the TGDC.
You ready for a deep dive?
And Jordan did most of the crap.
Can't believe I said that.
I've been doing this in 2008. What the fuck do I know?
Drawing hands is my kryptonite.
Loading up elbow logos.
Yeah, for the show.
Welcome to the DGDC, a united team of design professionals, creatively bound to bring unique inspiration and uncommon perspectives. You can email us listener questions or topic ideas to hello@dgdcpod.com or check out our website, dgdcpod.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram or Twitter @dgdcpod. Plus now you can join in on the conversation. We have a Facebook group. Just pop onto our website and hit the community tab at the top. Now, on with the show.
All right, guys. Well, we are back. How's everybody doing? Jordan, Mikkel, good to see you guys.
Good. Yeah.
We're hanging in there. It's like 1,000 degrees in Portland, and I'm pretty sad, but I'm doing okay.
I know. It's so hot. It's stupid hot this week. Yeah.
I've never, ever remember hearing how much the temperature for you guys. Like, I've never heard that before. Any other
time. It's never in the news.
Like, record. No, I mean, this is like a record summer for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We just had like the hottest week on record, and now it's not going to be as hot, but it's still up there.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I think this is the first summer we did not have any kind of, I'm sure you guys have heard, we have like a June gloom, which all June, it's like gloomy, kind of hot and like, you know, humid. We did not have that at all. It went right into summer, and it has been
transition.
Summer. You know, literally May, June, July, and now well into August. So it's been air conditioned all day. Working from home really, really adds up.
It does.
All right. Well, you guys have probably heard the word Jason or the name Jason mentioned there. We have a really great guest joining us today. Jason Craig, what's up, dude? Welcome to the podcast.
How's it going? Yeah. We'll see how good of a guest I am in the next hour.
Probably that's my bad. I snuck his name in there too early, didn't I?
Yeah. That was great. It was like a little Easter egg.
He's his fourth person.
Easter egg, sure.
Well, Jason, before we get into the topic and what we're talking about a little bit, real quick, this really sparked from a conversation had with Jason, and it was like such a cool idea to kind of maybe spend a whole episode on. Give everybody a little intro about yourself, where you're from, what you do. Go for it, bro.
So, thanks for having me on. My name is Jason Craig. I am a illustrator, artist, graphic designer, muralist, entrepreneur, I guess, from Augusta, Georgia. I might have said that. And I grew up in the Midwest. I've had a range of jobs. I've worked at agencies. I've worked for weekly publications, newspapers, sign shops, t-shirt shops, a little bit of everything, nonprofits. And now for the past couple of years, I've been on my own, mostly doing branding, illustration, and just all that stuff that falls under the umbrella. I'm more of a print designer than a web guy, like just stuff you can hold in your hands and throw at people. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And I occasionally paint a mural and run my mouth at conferences too. So.
There you go. Sometimes you do it at the same time.
sometimes at the same time.
Pay extra for that, but yeah, that is a service.
If you guys are listening, and I think the best thing to do is like check out Jason's Instagram. I'm going to give it to you right now. It's Jason the 29th, right? So Jason, T-H-E 29th. Just so you can see a little bit about his stuff, because like the reason I reached out to Jason was I met you a long time ago at Crop Pop-Up Portland. I think you hosted that time, correct? Back in the day.
Yes, I did.
And that was so cool. And you know, through Matt, our buddy. But one of the things I really talked about Jason about when we were kind of chatting was I love people that put out not only great work and hard work. Like I look at your stuff and kind of same way I look at a lot of what you do, Jordan, as well. Just the intricacies, the illustration side, and you do it with such a like a fun, positive vibe. And I really just want more people to see your work, and we want to just share people like you 100% because I think your perspective on this is really great. But I just love following folks that really show incredible work from the heart. That's kind of
and
what
just
I,
such a
what I
wealth of
you.
Diversity in the illustration. Like, you know, they always say like everyone's got that thumbprint when you're like getting into like fine art and illustration. But man, Jason, like your work is, arguably I think it's incredibly sick. But like the ability you can just like pivot from one style to the other. Like there's a lot of cool stuff. So yeah, I'd say right now, if anyone's listening, just to pop on the Instagram, just to get a taste of like how cool this shit is.
Yeah,
thank you. I hope this is how the whole hour goes. Just crazy, man. This is gonna be great. We could go for 2 hours. It's gonna be like this.
It's gonna be well into Sunday, and we'll still be talking about it.
yeah, exactly. I can do this forever. Well, you know, the positivity thing, I got to be honest, it doesn't come natural. I'm a cynical kind of asshole. I'm an old head that I came up with this mindset that as a designer, you don't teach people stuff. You find your competition, you chop their head off, make sure they can't steal your job and hoard all your knowledge. Keep it tight. And it wasn't until I started working with millennials who are sort of like our modern hippies that are like everything, everybody loves everybody, share all your resources type thing, that I realized that old thinking of, you know, become king of the hill and stay there, that's a tired old way of thinking. And if you don't find your community, if you don't share these things, then you're just going to be stuck in whatever rut it was that you laid a claim to. And now I've found that by keeping that stuff positive, keeping it going upbeat and working hard, I can teach other people to do what I do, and I can do something different. Yeah. And that's how I keep it fresh. That's how I stay excited, because I'm always excited about what's the next thing. It's how I stay diverse, because I don't feel like I'm the person that's going to spend my entire career drawing lettering with a chili pepper dipped in ink or some one thing or even one illustration style.
Totally.
And that's kind of a thing that I have to work at, because I do come from a background of keep your head down and mind your own business and stay away from me. And so I have to work hard to fight that urge.
Sure.
Yeah, there really was that pivot too. Like I would say, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, it felt like more and more people were like talking about processes and showing behind the scenes. And it, so much so now that arguably it's kind of a business that a lot of like, you know, designers can get into where they teach, right? Or like they, you know, give workshops or they speak, you know, it's like it's became this whole like angle wedge in the industry, which is cool.
Yeah. I wonder too, I always try to think of what the reason is that not only just like what you mentioned, but I always think of it as like there's so much work out there in a way that it's okay to share some of your secrets and your tips and your tricks and the things that, like you said, even companies or studios hold as like proprietary information, right? You're kind of now sharing this stuff. And one thing I really dig about it is I don't think you have to be even in the media you are to be inspired by folks like you who put out so much work and show it. I think even if you're just a watercolorist and that you just do it on the side, I still can get inspiration from anyone sharing the way kind of like you do, you know?
I agree, and I hope so. And part of it, I grew up in a very isolated place in the Midwest in Illinois, and I did not have a lot of influences other than the few cable channels that we had and MTV. And so I feel that if I would have had a mentor, if I would have had people saying, this is what we're doing over here, it's cool, you can do this, that my life would have been a lot different. I'm very happy with where I'm at, but it's been an uphill thing, and it's always been going against the current, always against the grain, always explaining to my family what it is that I do for a living and why I don't have a real job. and I just I would have had a lot more fun. Yeah, I would have had a lot more fun in my teens and 20s if I had somebody like me around being like, "Yeah, go draw some pictures. And you can live on a golf course one day."
Yeah.
If nobody told me that.
Yeah.
It's like you're finding the path on your own, and it's surprising. Like I love when little things kind of come up in our world that can really show you that things are obtainable, not the traditional route that has been told you 100 times over when you were a kid. Like,
did we always know we were going to strive for this, or that we were going to be here? No, I didn't.
What do you guys think? Oh, you mean as a working creative, or just somewhat successful
in the creative industry altogether? No, oh, I would have had.
Really? To me, I think it was my only choice.
Same.
As a kid. Same. I mean, I'm talking. Yes. You're second grade, third grade. You knew.
Well, dad was an architect. Mom was a teacher. So it was kind of like this perfect balance. And I love the fact that, like, my job is a bit creative and education, you know?
But, yeah, that's funny.
But I think seeing my dad, my dad worked for a big company as a creative. And I think that was, I even remember, like, you looked at the dad on Brady Bunch doing the same thing. Like, there was an artistic job and he made a living. Seeing my dad have that same kind of thing. I remember, I think I just picked it up naturally. I think I've said this 1,000 times. I don't think I was ever good as a kid. I still am not a good, like, illustrator.
But it was a passion. You could have called it a passion.
Oh my gosh. But that's all I did as a kid.
Yeah. I don't have this in common with anybody in my family. We're all so totally different. It sounds, Jason, like that's the case for you too.
Graphic design was the biggest light bulb over my head ever.
Hmm. I didn't know about design, but I did. I just wanted to be an artist. Mm-hmm. And the Darren Stevens and the Mike Brady's and those people actually made it worse for me, because that was a fantasy. That was not a thing that people did. Right. I looked outside my door and I saw farmers and factory workers, and all they talked about was how lucky they were that they got in young. But then at the same time, I watched my grandfathers retire, and as soon as they retired, they started doing creative stuff. They started welding sculptures and being craftsmen and doing all these things. And I was like, they're so happy doing this. They're so happy not working at that factory. Why are they trying to get me to go work for this in this factory? And that was my goal. But I think that now, after doing this consistently for 23 years, I think that the chances of me becoming a farmer are very slim. I'm not sure that they would take me now if this thing doesn't work out. And so I think that I need to probably realign my goals. Yeah. I would not be qualified to work in a factory, even at the – I couldn't stock the vending machines. I'm basically useless at this point.
Well, I align kind of with that, and I'm curious, like, for me, you know, my dad and my grandfather, like, my whole family line on my dad's side have been, like, carpenters and own construction companies, and, like – I watched, you know, my dad, same thing. Like, he broke his back for years. Like, don't ever get into this fucking business, you know?
Yeah.
And, but now he's getting older, you know, he can't do the same work. So he's getting creative. Like, he's building little wood things, and, like, his clients, like, are, like, more artistic driven stuff. But from an early age, I knew I didn't want to get into that line of work. I didn't necessarily know I'd be, like, in this line of work. Like, I wanted to play music. Like, I think 90% of most designers somehow translate, you know, there's something there that transitioned from music into this. But I think, like, seeing the other side of things helped me figure out, like, I didn't want to go that route early on immediately. Or, like, can I find something?
Sometimes that's all it takes, right? Totally. Process of elimination straight away.
Where did you, Mikkel, where did you find this route? Like, how did you, what made the link over to graphic design creative?
So at a university level, I opted to minor in computer science. And then I found that I could attend all of these elective courses that were about teaching Adobe products to people. So that's how I learned. I had to learn how to instruct Adobe products, the one primary one being Photoshop over the course of a couple of years. So that's how I learned the programs at the very beginning. And then I was doing web, I was just a developer throughout this minor program. And so I thought, you know, there's got to be a way that I can take this CS degree and with an emphasis in graphics, take it down that road. So that's what I opted to do because I liked the fact that I was able to use that mathematical portion of my brain and the creative too. Yeah. And I still do to this day. So I really always appreciate that. Yeah.
I love that the degree of math is still very low here for our profession.
Yeah.
That's always the scary part. But goes to show you, everyone's story is different how you get there, you know, is particularly in this creative field. And I love the fact that you both brought up fathers and grandfathers getting into creativity.
I feel jealous about that because I don't have knowledge of that with mine. That's cool.
Yeah, same here. I know. It's like, I think it's a great thing. I think look around you with the internet, with all the, anything that's the connectivity we have. And if you're past retirement, those folks get to play around and mess. It's like going back to the play box, you know, with whatever they want to do, you know. But really, really quick, what we were wanting to kind of like zero in and talk about a little bit today was this idea of kind of like we're all in this solo entrepreneur thing. And one of the cool things we were talking about with Jason was this idea of the working autonomously. And what does that mean? And it could have, there's obviously pros and cons to everything we can talk about. But over the last year, I think we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, reaching out to the community, reaching out to others, networking in this time where it's a little bit tricky, making sure you're not siloed, right? Like we spent a lot of that time. But I think it's kind of neat to maybe focus on this and look at it as all the advantages that come from that. And we can all share it. And I know Jason had some really cool stuff to kind of start talking about. But I think we can intro this in by thinking about, what do you do, Jason, as a this solo entrepreneur and someone on your own to keep things fresh, to keep things alive? How are you looking at the future and saying, wow, I got to do something today for tomorrow?
Yeah. So a lot of mine comes from just as old fashioned of a DIY punk rock aesthetic as possible. Nobody is here doing this for me. And I feel like I have to do it if I want to be able to do it. So like I just put on a poster show. It's not because I had a desire to put on a poster show. It's because I really wanted to make a poster for a poster show. And so to do that, I had to put on a poster show. And that's the way a lot of these things happen. We started a roller derby team. We started a creative roundtable. We started a live painting guild. There's so many things that we started because I just don't want to wait around for somebody else to do it. Yeah. And if it's a good enough idea that I actually get up and do it, then it's fantastic, and I love to be a part of it. But really, a lot of it is just because it's like whenever you learn to play bass just so that you'll have a better chance of being in the band. It's like that. Like, sure. If I organize the event, I know I'll get to be a part of it.
Mm. And if you want it that much, you'll make the time, right? Because I bet a lot of people are wondering, amidst deliverables and submissions for, you know, turning projects over and just meeting life. Expectation and balance of your own personal life. I mean, you've got three cats surrounding you. How do you find those pockets of time to contribute to these areas of passion?
It takes a ton of support. I know that I'm sitting here by myself working, but I couldn't do it without the support of the people around me. Yeah. My family has always been very supportive of all of my harebrained ideas. My friends are always willing to jump in and do anything I ask of them. And the community I live in is just incredibly, they trust me and they get behind the things that I do. And there's very rarely, do people say, oh, I've never heard of this idea before, so it must be a bad idea. On the contrary, they're like, well, Jason's doing it, and so I want to check it out because the last thing I want to happen is I want to miss out on something that was cool. And really, that's all I'm trying to do is within my abilities, make cool stuff that I see sometimes in other places and I get to participate in when I travel. And then I have so much fun doing it. Like you said, we're in Portland. We had so much fun there. I want to take those little bits and pieces and bring those back to my community. And I feel it's kind of what I'm able to do. I'm not going to ever be the mayor of this town. I'm not ever going to be a CEO of a big company, but I can have a lot of influence through creativity, through my ability to work harder than other people and to kind of invest myself into those things. And that's what it really takes. It takes a person willing to invest into it to make anything good happen. Because, I mean, rarely does a committee of people get anything done equally. It's always just like when you're doing your projects in college, one person does all the work, and then there's that guy that you never even met that shows up on the last day and signs his name to it.
Yeah, where do I sign? And
yeah. Good to meet you guys. This is our project. Cool. But it takes that one driver. It takes that one driver to make stuff happen. And I just really enjoy being that when it strikes.
Yeah. It's almost like you have the permission. You. I think a lot of people don't feel like they have the permission to ignite something, right?
Yeah, but a deep part of that is like, I think is what separates like passion work, right? Like you're gonna do it no matter what, right? Like you find a way, right? And that's sort of the like secret sauce of like, well, what, how do you go above and beyond? It's like, because I fucking like doing it. Like I want to do it all the time. Right. It doesn't feel like I'm clocking in. It doesn't feel like I'm giving away without getting something back. And that's the beauty, I think, of like where you see those designers who kind of like put on, you know, I look at like Matt Dawson, who like put on a whole creative, you know, event, or like, you know, people out there building shit or like making stuff and printing and like selling stuff. Like there's something in there. Mm-hmm. And I think that commonality is like that dedication, that passion of just like the industry and sort of what they do. Right. And I think that's like a big key component.
And what you said about the, you said something I didn't, about not getting anything back. And that is true, because it's like you do get, there is a return on this stuff, and it does, you build social capital, you build reputation, you get a lot for it. But like going back to what I said, is I didn't want to play in a poster show. I wanted to be in a poster show. And even though I did get to be in a poster show, I only spent 2 hours on my poster for the whole 6 months that it took to plan the thing. 2 hours of that was making my poster.
That explains it all right there.
Yeah. Like Elon Musk building an empire so he can go to space. Like, cool, man. I get it. Yeah.
So I can have a sports car floating in space. That's about it.
Right. And that's it. Like really, I have more of a desire to influence other people and get a spark going with them, so that one day I will open up my internet and see that somebody else is putting something on, and then I'll be like, ooh, I just want to participate.
Yeah.
That's such a well-aged idea. Like, I think that really does come with like the evolution of like progress in this industry, where you are in your career. That point of like, I want to influence people, I want to build the community, versus early stage. And I was kind of like there as well, Jason, where like, I want to be the best, and I just want to put my head down and fucking climb, you know?
Yeah.
But I think when you get to like at that certain point of like really trying to give back, like grow this community that we're in, because it is I think one of the best industry communities out there. There's something to that.
Yeah, you have to immerse yourself in some sort of fashion.
Totally.
Yeah. And I've always said, I've always kind of, my joke is that as long as it doesn't take time, talent, or money, I'm in.
That's a great t-shirt.
Yeah, excellent. As long as it doesn't take any of those three, I'm in.
So funny. Tell everybody a little bit about the poster show. Like, absolutely. You know, because to me that was like such an interesting thing, and I saw you just had a ball doing it. It looked like, from seeing, and I know it's all hard. I know, dude, what that's got to take. But seeing, just getting to see community people follow behind you, and more people get in, and then you shared the stories of it. Where did it start from? You know, tell them a little bit about how you got that rolling.
Well, I didn't invent the idea to have a poster show. I've actually participated in them with AIGA Atlanta. Austin does a really cool poster show. There's poster shows. And so I just wanted to do something. It started out during pandemic. I live right next to the baseball team. The Braves have a minor league baseball team right next to my house. And they posted a little Instagram post that's like, hey, come and work from this little luxury suite for a week. It's like $100, and you go over there and work for a week. Well, I can see it out my window. What? And so I was just like, from a business standpoint, I was like, what is the point of me going over there and working for a week? Is it just to get one Instagram post? And so that y'all could be like, oh, look, Jason worked at a baseball stadium.
Yeah, good awareness at the forefront, right, by the way.
But yeah, and is there value in that? Is there value for me to go over there and work just for an Instagram post? Well, then I was like, well, what else do they have? And then I saw they have a big suite. And I was like, okay, well, what could I do with that? Could I invite other designers in and do a project and live stream it and do all this stuff? And I was like, nobody wants to watch us work. And so then it just kept growing and growing and growing until I was like, what is the biggest, coolest space y'all have? And it's called the Wow Club. And it is a huge, like, glass box sitting on top of the stadium that overlooks our city and has nothing in it. It's just a big glass box. And I was like, I want to invite all the artists I know to do posters and have a poster show in here.
Amazing.
And have a crazy party. And at the time that I wanted to do it, COVID was full. I mean, this place was locked down. I called a couple of my friends and I said, I was like, I don't care if your arms fall off. You have to do a poster for this show because I'm about to pay a deposit on a place. And at that time, you know, I had to sign a bunch of stuff that said that I could only have 55 people, that if it gets canceled, that I don't get my money back. Wow. And you know, you got to remember that at the end of the day, I'm still just a guy. I'm just a person spending my money on this stuff. I don't have a trust fund or a agency funding me or a corporate sponsor. I'm just a person breaking open my piggy bank to fund this thing. Yeah. And I took a gamble on it, knowing that I had a couple people that would participate and that I was hoping that by July that we would at least be able to be out in public again. And the parts I didn't expect, when I put the call for artists out, the response was crazy. And really, I hadn't even put the call out yet. I had people hitting me up. They're like, hey, I heard through the grapevine that you're doing this poster show. I want in. And it just started to kind of groundswell. And then I was like, well, I got to put this call out because I'm gonna have enough people before I even tell anybody about it. And we put the call out. I had almost 100 people respond. And of those 100 people, 74 of them made a short list for 30 artists, which is really 29 because I was already going to be one of the artists. And
let's not forget the whole reason.
Yeah. It's the whole point is so I can do a poster. And so and there was a lot of different things that I wanted to do with this. As an artist, I submit to shows, and I get rejection letters, and a lot of times there's no reasoning. And sometimes it's like a curator just was going a different direction, and then sometimes they're like, well, we scored your submission, and your score was a 91. And I was like, well, what does that mean? Well, it's like, well, we got the scoring system. I was like, well, who made that scoring system up? You know, it's like, where does all this derive from? It's just, at the end of the day, it's just something somebody made up. And so I just felt like it would be a lot more better. It'd be better if this was a very straightforward event. I didn't want sponsors. I wanted it to just be me and the artists. And at the end of the day, I was like, well, I'm just going to pick 30 people. And if you want to know why I picked you or didn't pick you, we can have a conversation about it. But it turned out to be a very tough thing to do. I spent a whole weekend staring at a list. And I didn't even ask people for submissions. I was just like, let me know you're interested. And if you have an idea, tell it to me.
Oh, you didn't have a look at means of portfolio or anything?
More of the rationale why?
Nothing. Yeah, I was like, send me your Instagram. You know, if you want to show me some work, do it. And I really put the onus on them. And I didn't have, you know, jump through this hoop. It's just tell me what you want to do. And then whatever information you give me, that's what I'm going to base it off of.
Nice.
And I had some.
Did you have a range of people like overdoing it?
Yes.
That did.
Yeah. I mean, I had one individual that their poster was pretty much done, and then they ended up dropping out. And then I had another person who is their alternate that almost got best in show.
Wow.
And so, and that's the thing is that if you don't risk something, you're not going to gain anything. And by choosing that list like that, and then realizing that I came very close to making a mistake, and I might have made mistakes, I don't even know. Now I know. And I know next time that I need to keep that stuff in mind. I don't need to change it. I'm not going to have a rubric. I'm not going to have a form or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I do need to keep in mind that I don't know everything. And I might be wrong. I chose three judges that were not in the creative field. I chose three people that know the community to judge the posters.
Cool.
And of my five favorite posters, they liked one of them. And I was having a panic attack. I was like, wait a minute, this right here is the best design thing in the show. I am a designer. I know. And they're like, yes, it's okay. I was like, it's not okay. It's fantastic. And well, so that is
just perfectly applicable to anything you might
present
to a client because they sure as shit don't have a design background themselves, which
it's
leaves
exactly right.
Every or when a single client shows piece a friend. Up for argument and completely subjective. It's
and it's
crazy.
It's exactly right. It's exactly right. And that's why whenever we talk about design trends, we're talking about stuff that was on Dribbble 2 days ago. And really, design trends are what are outside your house. Whenever you walk down the street and see the
very
restaurant signs and all that, that's design trends, not the shapes that we're making.
Sure.
But, you know,
that's such a good
point. Going back to the poster show, it surprised. The only prompt was it had to be Augusta. It just had to be something to Augusta, and all the artists had to have a tie to Augusta. Well, I was finding out there's people all over the country that have relatives here. They play music of James Brown, who's from here. All kinds of different things that gave me enough of a tie that I knew they cared about it enough to do the show. And the second part was the community showed up. We pre-sold a ton of tickets. We had a VIP. Friday night was the VIP. Saturday was a free all-day thing. And we ended up selling out of 14 out of the 30 posters and have sold out of a couple more since then. And so it was a huge, huge, huge success with no sponsors, with just me.
That's cool.
And, but, you know, it's not just me. My wife really worked hard to keep me propped up and pushing me and kicking me to make it happen.
But still, that's a small, it's, cool. It's just you guys. And it was, like you said, it wasn't a sponsor. And I think that just the true passion of it was for you to do it. And you did it.
Yeah.
You know, and I it's such a great story. In the long, I mean, I'm assuming you would do this again in a heartbeat.
Well, okay. So a while back, I decided that I don't want to do events that are just in perpetuity. I would like to do one-off events. Cool. And then I was happy to make this a one-off event. But then the printer at the show was, I mean, the printer, my only partner was the printer. And they were smile. I mean, there was the smiles on their face was ear to ear. Because this was a showcase of all their work. And, I mean, they were so happy on a Friday night, just grinning ear to ear, just looking at all the people and everything that's going on. And my friend Trent at the print shop, he put his hand on my shoulder and he said something about next year. And I was like, well, you know, and he's like, no, Jason, I'm not asking. I'm saying next year. And I was like, cool. Noted. So,
that's so cool.
But this all ties perfectly into, like, this, like, entrepreneurship, right? Like, where, you know, you look at, like, it's not freelance. We're not just, you know, doing a trade, sending someone a logo. It's like you do so much more when you get into, like, the certain age where, like, you're running a business or you're putting on events or, like, you know, a lot of it's like, you know, how do you network? It's these instances, it's these moments where, like, you transition from sort of a trade designer to, I think, someone who runs businesses, someone who operates more than just, like, their sort of creative direction. Yeah. And this is, like, that perfect example of, like, these sort of moments that
happen. And that's why your buddy does what he does. He wants moments. You want moments like that to see where you came together. That guy got to shine as well. Not just the artist, not just you, right? It was this.
Yeah.
I love hearing that story, dude. That's fantastic.
Partnerships with the printer, like, all these cool things that transpire again from one idea of, like, I want to make a poster, you know, and then you see at the end of the line of, like, all these things that happened, all these people you've met, these networks, this potential business that you created.
So I did one other thing that I thought was very, very unique and cool is that I documented the entire process on my Instagram story. And so from the very beginning, you know, it just was me holding up a sheet of paper that said Augusta Poster Show. And then on my story throughout, I show where I'm buying insurance. I show where I'm going to pay venue.
Wow.
I show all that stuff. And you can sit and you can watch from start to finish. The only thing that is not on my story is actual footage of the show because I was at the show.
Yeah, so, of course.
But if you wanted to know how an event gets made, you can watch those stories and you can just kind of see over the months of process. Cool. And I thought that was, like, a really fun way to keep me motivated and to keep me on task.
Yeah.
And then if somebody was like, well, how do I do it? Like, just go watch. You do it.
You documented it. And that's
little,
so cool.
In little bursts.
Yeah, exactly. And what a great way to do it. I think that story thing kind of is you capturing, like, an eyewitness of each of those things, the talk with the lease, the talk with whatever it was, you know, how did you promote? And then that's promoting it as well. That's doing your social media content at the same time, right?
Right. Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. I had plenty of people that were like, yo, I'm sick of seeing this poster show stuff. I was like, yeah, I did.
Oh,
yeah, this is where I promote it.
And but you were grinning. You were grinning ear to ear, like doing it. And I think it shows. Yes. You know what I mean? And I think like I'm sitting here going, like, why haven't I done something like that? Or I love seeing something that is that inspiring that makes you want to think. And I don't have to do it at that level. I could do it at the much smaller level. Something you could just do that's igniting your own spirit and something you wanted to do on your own. You know?
And that was the biggest and most involved thing I've done on my own. And I've done a lot of small events and a lot of small little programs. We had a studio called Pink Slips and we had Art Night. It was very successful, but literally all we did was open the door and fill coolers with ice. We did nothing else. There was no prep. There was no nothing. And so there was no air conditioning either. And so to go from a garage, a concrete floor garage in the Augusta heat, to luxury box at a baseball stadium. In my mind, everybody should believe that if I can go from one end to the other, that everything in between I should be able to do as well. Mm-hmm. And including myself. I mean, now I know that I can do those things.
Mm-hmm. So cool, dude. The other thing that really inspired me was this First Friday's idea that you had, because I think a lot of times we hear from our listeners, we hear from even just ourselves, that what can we do solo to inspire mm-hmm. The other creatives maybe in our neighborhood, and do it in a real design focused way, not so much chamber of commerces or, you know, things that are in our city. But you brought that up, and I thought this was a really cool thing that was talking to the workers and the people, not so much bosses and salespeople that were going to typical right. things that were in the neighborhood. Tell us a little bit about what you did and how you inspired that.
So Creative Roundtable is what it's called. So one mm-hmm. of the things that's really cool about my community is that there's not so much competition that you have to name your stuff anything odd. You can just call it what it is, like Poster Show or Art Night or Creative Roundtable. Yeah. And that yeah. is a great advantage. Yeah. You don't have to call it like Vibe Out Friday or anything like that. You just call it Creative Roundtable. So what it was is I saw this trend where you go to these luncheons and you see a speaker speak, and whether it's through AdFed or AIGA or Ad Club or whatever it is, and you leave work, you go to the lunch, you eat the chicken and rice or whatever they've got, you watch the speaker, and then you basically wave at your peers and run back to work. And the whole point of these things is networking, but you don't actually get to network because you have to go back to work. And so mm-hmm. you glance yeah. at people. And you'd be like, hey, how's everything going? You're like, oh, yeah. going good. Bye. And so I wanted to figure yeah. out a way that mm-hmm. pressure to get back to work on time was not dictating the reason you're there. And so what we did is on the first Friday of every month, we would commandeer a coffee table or a table at a coffee shop. And we would just invite people to come and sit down and join us. We didn't buy coffee. We didn't do anything. It cost us nothing. All we had to do is show up. We had 24 people the first time we had it. We realized very quickly that we needed to have at least a loose outline of a theme just to give people something to talk about. And we kind of kept track of new people and got their email addresses so we could invite them the next time. In the first couple of years, I think we had 300 different people show up. And basically what it was is you could drop in, you could leave if you had to go to work or whatever, and we would just kind of sit there and talk about the topic at hand. We talked about diversity. We talked about the Academy Awards. We talked about all kinds of stuff. But the first half hour was to talk about yourselves. We'd go around and one of the things I like to do is I would ask you what you do and then what you like to do, because so often we define ourselves by our profession. And so it's like, okay, well, I'm a graphic right. designer, but I like event planning. And so that would kind yeah, of give people yeah, a little bit more right. insight about what motivates me. Well, cool. then it would also kind of connect people, because people would be like, oh, you do this? I do that too. And people had never met before and had no potential uh-huh. of meeting would meet each other. And they started actually networking, not like a BNI group where it's like, oh, let's exchange business cards. And when you need a plumber, I'll call you. And whenever you need a graphic designer, you call me. This was actual people that were connecting. And I watched people that struggled, that were looking for a job, that couldn't find one, that then found a job and were like would come to the meeting and be like, hey, I'm going to work in another town, so I'm not going to be able to come to these roundtables anymore. It's like, that's very great and very sad at the same time. But we've done it for several years, and obviously COVID kind of put a stop to it for a while. We need to get it back going again. But we didn't miss a Friday for 3 or 4 years that we've done this. And it everybody's invited, but it gives the feet on the ground people, the people that don't wear a tie to work every day, mm-hmm. Gives them an outlet that is a little bit more palatable to a boss, where they say, okay, on Friday at 8 a.m., I'm gonna be a half hour late because I'm going to go to this roundtable thing, not I got to go spend $25 and 2 hours of my life to go to a lunch and come back with the itis and be useless all afternoon. And it showed that, like, some of the people, how we define ourselves, like, we tend to gravitate towards people that are interested in what we are. And so without this, I would have never met freelance media buyers. I would have never met UX designers. I would have never met just visual artists that were in my town that didn't go to the same bar yeah. as me or don't go to the same things as me. Yeah. And this was just a kind of a very neutral ground type of no intimidation way to do it. The funniest part about these things is these ideas are so simple, and people will be like, this will never work. I'm like, what do you mean it'll never work? It's like, well, what are you going to do to get them there?
Because it's so simple.
And I'm like, you don't have to bribe people with donuts. You just have a quality product and a quality mission, and just stick it to that. Just stay with that. You know, yep. It's creative roundtable. Well, what do you do there? Well, it's a roundtable with creatives. It's that. You know, it's not creative roundtable plus donuts plus coffee plus,
yeah.
You know, it's just creative roundtable, and just keep it going.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break from the episode with Jason and talk to you about the sponsor of this episode, Skillshare. You, myself, Jordan, Mikkel, Jason, everyone, we've all been here to like come and create. That's kind of what we do as a job. It's kind of what we do for passion projects. And whether you've picked up a paintbrush in the last few months or it's been quite a while and you haven't done something really cool to explore your creativity and be inspired, well, now's your chance to do it. And our recommendation is Skillshare. You know Skillshare as an incredible online learning community. Their membership is so meaningful because it's really built for you and exactly how you want to use it. You can explore, check out all the projects it has to make. There are short courses, there are long courses, and the cool thing about it is you're helping fellow creatives and supporting them along with you on your journey, accomplishing real growth. For this episode, we found a really cool course that we thought was worth mentioning. It's by Timmy Cooker, and it's basically a fantastic course all about digital poster design, combining images and type to make powerful visuals. This is a quick course. It's only a 90-minute class. So if it's something new and you're looking for something cool to dive into Skillshare with, this is a perfect course to do it. It's a super quick class, like I said, and you learn his inspiring approach and how he combines images and type to create bold visual designs that would work perfect as poster designs. He gives you all of the tools, including thoughtful ways to develop your conceptual artistry, how to take photographs that really might work cool for this poster design, and unique Photoshop methods that help you create compelling backgrounds. It's really worth checking out, particularly based on the topic we're talking about today. So, with all of this great stuff to look at, whether you're just a pro or a dabbler or a hobbyist or even a master of any creative side, you can be a creative in something new that you've never tried before. So discover what you can with all of these classes, and they're made for every skill level. You can experience real improvement with hands-on projects and classes designed for real life. They fit into your schedule any way. Just like Netflix, just like anything you use on demand, you can listen to these at your convenience. And Skillshare is also very incredibly affordable, especially when you compare it to any pricey in-person class or workshop. Their annual subscription is less than $10 a month. So how do you take advantage of this? Well, feel free to explore your creativity at skillshare.com/deepend2, and you will get 1 month free of their premium membership. That's right, 1 month free of premium membership. Make sure you go to skillshare.com/deepend2 to take advantage of this incredible offer. Now, back to our episode.
Did you get the word out there within your community through social media or otherwise?
Mostly, yeah. It was we would post a Facebook post and then word of mouth, and then I would contact like the agencies. I would send out personal invitations. A lot of the stuff that I do is there's a lot of arm twisting that goes on, and so there's plenty of people that have got phone calls from me, and I'd be like, I need you to come to this thing. I need you to do this, and a lot of the times they'd be like,
so in a way you were offering your version.
yeah, exactly. So but it was a very very low pressure thing that didn't take any kind of prep. I would fly down there, find a parking space, and sometimes, you know, I felt bad because there'd be people waiting on me and be like, oh, let me pull some tables together. And, you know, sometimes there was just two or three people. Sometimes there was sometimes we had to split it into two. And then the best ones we'd get talking, like the diversity discussion that we had, and it was a challenge that I'd got from the governor of AdFed here at our district to do more about diversity, not just live it, but like advocate for it. And we started a diversity discussion that we would have been there for 8 hours talking about because we were so engaged and our group was very diverse. It was a mix of everybody. And it was just a very special thing that I think is repeatable. I think that anybody could do it in any town. I think that if you just and keep it authentic.
And it'll shift and change a little bit.
It changed constantly.
In its own way. It changed constantly.
Yeah. Which is, yeah. I think it's beauty. Like it should not have completely. The structured kind of segments that it has to right. be every time.
Yeah. And then you know not to have True. Any expectations, right. knowing how yeah. different.
Well, those are all the keys. Like, I think that it's such a bullshit tactic to, like, all right, we're all going to go watch, some sort of speaker, and then we all leave. Or, like, we're all going to, do these, like, trust games or, like, whatever. It's like, that's not how people operate, Like, people want, like, we want to gather around what's the commonality. It's our shared interests. Like, that's it. That works.
Right.
Like, that's all we need.
Right.
Let it develop organically. Because, honestly, that's how relationships are made. It's never, like... Yeah. Put two people in a room and then forced. It works. It's like, that's fucking bullshit. Like, this is the way it actually operates in the real world.
Yeah.
And everyone, I don't know any designer that doesn't want to talk shop all the time at all. Right. Like, I think it works.
I always feel like a sign of a good event that you put on or a good program is that if it will carry on without you, if the event itself has enough momentum that you don't have to keep paddling the boat to make it go. And that's kind of like the way it was with Art Night. With Art Night, there was the second time we did it, all of us primaries in the studio, we were standing outside looking back in the door and it was just going. And I was like, and I was like, we could go home and this thing would function. and I almost thought that they would probably lock up at 10 o'clock when it was over. I mean, and if you do an event right and do it well enough, you don't have to micromanage it. Yeah, the poster show, I really had to work hard to not micromanage the volunteers because it just had to be what it was going to be. I can't be everywhere and do everything. And so I had to...
Organically. Yeah. Well, what about the very jump start? Everybody arrives, you start making intros. Mm-hmm. Is it a little awkward at first? And then people kind of get into their own...
So.
Just like any party.
It's like any party, but like if you've ever been to any kind of talk and they do a Q&A at the end, everybody has that fear of sounding stupid and they don't want to ask a dumb question. Well, fortunately for me, I don't mind sounding stupid. And so I'm good at kickstarting those. And so a lot of times whenever, like if I'm doing a speaker thing and they do a Q&A, I always want to know ahead of time and I'll throw up some weird prompts and throw some like little odd things in there. But I always tell the audience, like, if you don't ask me a question, I'm going to start asking you questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just keep it going. And so I've always had that really good moderator thing. And I can tell when like this person's been quiet and I don't like isolate them or make them uncomfortable, but I try to draw them in. Yeah. And I try not to filibuster. I try not to do all the talking. And I also have a very good memory, so I can recall things that they brought up and get, just find where they're interested. It's like I went to...
Yeah, then the genuineness starts to strike
through. Like I went to Chicago last weekend, and I asked this guy in downtown Chicago where's a good place to eat, and he was just like, I don't know. And he really had no answer. And then I was like, well, we might go to Logan Square later. And the dude popped up. He's like, Logan Square. I'm from Logan Square. Well, you can be here. And I was like, settle down, man. And that's the thing is you just have to find that little thread that pulls them to you.
Jeez.
And I would say like any young designers, again, I liken everything to this idea of, like, networking, because it's, like, sort of like the pricing question I get all the fucking time of, like, how do you network? It's, like, you just kind of go to these events, and it's not as daunting. It's not like a normal party where you're all strangers. Like, there is the commonality. You all share an interest. That makes it really nice. You can, you see that rebrand, blah, 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 or, like, whatever the case may be, it makes it really easy to kind of just, like, put yourself in the space and enjoy, that shared interest. Like,
right.
That's the first check. You're already there. Like, we're all here for the same sort of reason.
And I think that event has to break the ice a little bit itself in a way where I know I've walked into those ones where you get the first capture visually and you go, like, I'm out of here. Like, this is not going to be
the event. There's like an agenda or like.
Exactly. And I think what's interesting too is, exactly.
We have a half hour regimen for the next 6 hours.
He's still got a beeper or a cell phone holster on his belt. Yeah. Like, you're out of there, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the way you described it was there's no stage, there's no audience, there's no it breaks the mold of what I think we all think we're gonna walk into.
Itinerary.
Right. And I think if you could kind of create the right environment, it's gonna happen naturally. The only thing we have close to that is our friends Jen and Amy Hood, Josh Ariza. They started a thing called Connecting Things in Orange County here in LA. And it's a bit far for us, but I take my students there all the time because it is probably the most casual yet informative and result-oriented little get-together for creatives I've ever been to. It has the agendas there. They always have like a guest speaker, but the way they pick the right venue that is comforting doesn't feel like the typical place. The right people show up. And like you said, Jason, you meet people that you wouldn't technically meet if you just did the same thing over and over again. Like,
right.
I don't need to meet another branding person. I do want to meet the UI UX person or, you know, the set designer for theater or something. God, that's so much more inspiring to me.
Yeah. I know of individuals that won't show up unless alcohol can flow a little bit so that they loosen up some and they can get a glass or two in, and then they really start to connect.
So we did another one, and I'm glad you said that because it made me think of this. So once a quarter, we would do it at night. We would do it at a bar/coffee shop. We have this really cool place that's just like a coffee bar. It's like not quite a bar, not quite a coffee shop.
But what
we would do with that one is we would do a speed dating thing where everybody would contribute topics, and you would go to your tables, and you would go to the table, and there was a timer, and it was like everybody would talk about this one thing, and so you would flip it over, and it would be like anything. I mean, some of the cards I would make were insane, and some of it is like, you know, what's your favorite commercial on TV, and then others were like, you know, why do you wear cotton shirts, and it would just be the most random stuff to make conversation go.
And
it would just move and move and move, and it was so much fun. And then, like, there was always like the, you know, we take a group photo afterwards, post it so people could see it was dope. That we had 40 people, and so we would have the stuff for the people that couldn't make it in the mornings and that wanted to cut loose a little bit more, and that was kind of that grew out of necessity, but it was still kind of a do it at a time where you don't have to ask permission. And that's another thing that I think there are a lot of people that need a gatekeeper. It just keeps them in line. But then there's a lot of us that don't. I don't need to ask somebody if I can do most things. Obviously, you don't want to have a victim of your success. But, but you know, for the most part, you don't need to ask somebody, can I start a podcast? Can I start a creative roundtable? Can I start a poster show? You just have to... You just do it. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Yeah. But again, even turning it back to like that mindset of entrepreneurship is just like, I'm going to build it. I if it doesn't exist, I'm going to make it. If I want it, I'm going to actually transpire it into the world.
And it helps. It helps to know what exists and have a breadth of knowledge, because like if we had creative mornings here, I would never start a creative roundtable because I would just go to that. There wouldn't be a need for it. And then I would be limited because not everybody would go to that. And so it's kind of like a blessing and a curse to kind of – I grew up in a town that had nothing, and now I live in a town that doesn't have everything. And there's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you think those advantages of like the smaller town, smaller city versus larger
– Completely.
I think that could be that advantage / disadvantage in one sort of little swoop there. Is like really identifying the surroundings and where you can find the holes or things that are like not being utilized.
Yeah, but I mean, I still live Augusta's the same size as Austin as far as square miles. We just don't have as many people. So I mean, it's a big spread out place, and so I'm focused on this one little area of my downtown. But there is a ton of people in Augusta that have no idea who I am or what I do, and you know, I'd love to try to reach all of them. I wanted to reach a lot of those people with the poster show, and I did get to some of them, but I didn't get to enough. So that's my goal for next year, is to reach out to those people.
Funny, because I thought my first I was weighing this like, I'd love to do this, but the first hurdle that I felt was LA. It's too big. But then you're right. You can find your own territory that you feel one is good for you if you're going to be the ringleader, but you know, that's easy location wise and everything, or you have a great spot to do it at because you have that person or whatever. But I think there's no excuse. Like, there's a way to figure this out if it's something you really, really want to do. I'm inspired to try it, and I think it's a great way out of to get people back into meeting, doing it outside if we need to, and spearheading just some really good collaborations and networking down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking I of, think that we I think we tend to make this, it's this triangle that we make, and the points of the triangle are where we work, where we sleep, and where we eat. Yeah. And then what is inside of that triangle is pretty much your identity and your culture is inside that triangle. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you'd expand it. And
sure.
For some people, that triangle is very small. For some people, the country club is inside of that triangle, and their life is fantastic. But like now... Like now, I don't have a triangle. I sleep in the other room and I work in this room, and so yeah, I have to. It's a destination, and so I don't. That triangle, it's I can't go to the grocery store on my way home from work because I'm working from home.
Good
and so
observation.
You have to do this stuff with intention. You have to make a point to get out. I got invited out for beers last Thursday, and I was like, I haven't done this in a long, long time. And not because of COVID, but just because I don't make it a point to do those
things. Yeah, it happens anyway. I know.
It's easy to not, right? If your bubble
it's easy
is
to not.
Or your triangle
it
is.
It is.
In the, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then you always get, you come back home or the next morning, you're always,
yeah.
I'm so glad I did that, you know?
Right. And so I would recommend that people put that, just circle a day on the calendar. And it's like, if I haven't went and saw people, if I haven't done something.
Yeah, make a point.
Do it. Make a point to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, really
we
good,
need that stuff.
Really good reminder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm already.
You can go a long time. You can become a hermit real easy.
Dude. Oh God, I think I'm still battling with now that we have some openness and some restrictions. You could easily fall back to that hermit quickly.
I've spoken with people that have admitted that hermit component has enabled them. To a point that it's become a negative in their life.
Yeah.
The social media area of their life has taken over too heavily.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
And it's a quick turn to as opposed to going out physically anywhere.
Oh my God, it's
a
drug.
It's like Jordan said, it's just easier to not blank. You know, and that goes for a lot of stuff. It's just easier to not.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is. And then you fall into that routine. It's like they just put 30 Rock up on Netflix. So I could sit at home for weeks.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
done.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But I will say, you know, like I find like my best work, and it's not like I'm being inspired by going out and having beers, but like, I don't know, maybe someone said something at the table on that.
Mm-hmm.
Or just puts me in a better place. Like, you know, COVID really introduced me to like my fucking mental health of like, I am a hermit in COVID. Like, we can't go out. I live in Portland. Like, so I found like sometimes my work was suffering. I just wasn't excited at all. But as soon as I started going out a little bit more, as things like, you know, eased up, I noticed immediately I was way more inspired or energetic. Mm-hmm. I had something about it.
Well,
and I don't know if that was just like social interaction.
I think what it is we tend to have this ongoing conversation in our heads that just runs. We have this meeting that we're in all the time. And until somebody interrupts your meeting, it's just going to stay on one track. And so you get out and somebody interrupts it, and then you get back to it and you go, okay, where was I? And that's whatever new inspiration comes in, because you forgot whatever bullshit you were thinking about for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
You go, okay, where was I? Oh, yeah, I was going to do this thing.
It's the fresh eyes to the design. You come back
for sure.
You revisit,
for
right?
Sure.
Like you're in that mental
space. Wouldn't take place hadn't you stepped out otherwise.
Oh,
and if I'm the only person that talks. Yeah, if I'm the only person that talks to myself in my head all day, don't tell me, because I assume everybody does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Oh, yeah. For sure. You're lying if you say you don't.
It
you
just
know?
Takes the one person to admit it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
Nothing design-oriented by any means. It's because we're parents and there happens to be this bubble where it's pod school friendly, or just the littles get to go to school with masks on all day because they don't freaking care that we're engaged with other parents. It has nothing to do with the profession. It has nothing to do with creative, but it forces you to, you know, I won't allow Oakley to be non-social, and he's upset. He needs it. He's innately an extrovert. So yeah, let's go. And if it weren't for that if it weren't for that part of, you know, you don't want to be that guilty parent, right? So it'll just allow you to just go out there and run into people that are banging their heads against the wall, just like you are at any given park, for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think young designers in particular, the folks that are either in school or in their first few years of a job, and they've been working from home all this time or school at home, this is the perfect opportunity to like hear, listen to what Jason kind of said, even if it's just sparking the smallest of groups, two or three other designer friends to meet once a month and do something. We've missed out on that so much. And I think, again, like, you know, we can work independently. We can do that. We're all proving that. That's no problem. But it's, again, going back to those things and like use this time to spark something really great and united amongst some other folks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You can't do it all in that massive group chat.
Some Zoom call, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, there's 40 of us. Like, no. Well, good fucking luck.
Exactly.
No, right. And you don't have to have any sense for what track it's going to go down or anything.
No. Yeah.
No. I think that's the thing. No. When you do it for expectations, either a checklist, financial, whatever, it never is the right feel, and it's not organic. But for it to just be for you, like you said, I've always wanted to be a part of one of these, and there is none around me. Well, I'm going to make one.
There it is.
Yeah, that's so inspiring.
Speaking of the roundtable, let's have a little fun with this. Let's have a few questions before we end this. But these would be great questions to ask at your next creative roundtable. What do you guys typically tell people that you do when you're asked?
Oh, fuck. shit, I'll jump in. Like,
yeah.
I think it's I think it's responsive to whoever's asking, right? Like, if it's someone who might not know anything about it, like, shit, I might go wide and just say I'm a graphic designer or
let's
I
leave
run
it
a
at
creative
that.
Studio.
Let's
right?
make it very like the person that has no idea and you don't.
I
know
would
who
say
they are.
I would say I run a creative studio like that to me, like or a graphic designer. You know, I think it you know, something around there is probably.
I'm with Mikhail. Jordan. I say design studio. I say or depending on my mood, I'll say I'm a creative consultant. And then all of the time they think immediately it's I'm a home decorator and I do interior work.
Yeah,
which is so odd to me. But I say no, a lot of digital media, a lot of website work, a lot of print media. And then they're like, oh. And then the moment you say brand identity, they're like, what the fuck is that? You get that.
Brand identity.
It's like kind of like telling people where you live. It's like, you know, I'm from this little town in California, but I would never say like, I'm from Sebastopol, 7,000 people. I'd be like, oh, I'm from California. And then I might widen that like or narrow.
Yeah.
Oh, Northern California, Bay Area, Sonoma
That's
County.
A
like,
good one.
I'll funnel it in. If they check those boxes, I'll get granular with it, which similar to like, if there's someone in the industry, you know, I'm not just gonna be like, I'm a designer. You know, we'll dig in a little bit more.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
Jason, what do you say?
So this is funny. So I actually wrote this down because you sent me the questions. And I literally, this is what I'm going to read this. What I think they would want to hear is what I wrote. And then I have an explanation. So the context would be like artist, illustrator, graphic designer, et cetera, because they're not looking for what I do. They're looking for context so they can fill in the blank with what they think I do. So, yeah. So you're right. And I tell you where it's the hardest is at design conferences. When people ask you what you do, because it went from like it'll go from hyper specific to then I'm a creative to I am a UX designer for the financial industry I'm a designer. You know, it goes up and like a yo-yo.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, I don't want to limit myself, but you know, I think that if I had to pick if I had to pick something in a box for my LinkedIn, it'd be senior graphic designer.
Okay,
because I define that as a designer that solves their own problems and has a responsibility to make the people around them better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's solid. I'm happy with that.
That's good. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think enough people know that.
No, they're
right.
So there's a little education nugget.
Yeah.
They
think senior means like fourth year, like advanced or something. To me, it just means leadership.
I'm an AP graphic designer class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Longo?
I feel the same. It's always about who the person is. But if I have no idea who they are, I think after years of saying graphic designer and getting a what is that? Because they did not know. I tend to say brand builder now. I just say I help companies build their brand. And I think that encapsulates what I want to be more of, and that's all I like to really do. But then I can use it as an example and say, like, take for instance this. You see it on the shelves. You are gravitated to it. It's persuasive. It's selling. It's almost where, you know, it's a glorified salesman in a way. It's sometimes that way I look at it too. But I like that part of it because I like to pop in the strategy and that. Because after years of saying that, I don't think a lot of times it didn't have the cachet it did. But then all my years of agency work, that I would just tell them my title, because like you said, Jason, like if you, when you add senior or you, whatever it was, that became part of, unfortunately I felt like it, that title part was what I would use to be my identity, you know, mm-hmm. like I put so much in there, because of just doing all that corporate ladder crap and everything. So like, but now I and then sometimes it's just, you could just say I'm creative, you know, I'm a creative and then you can let them fish a little bit. Like you said, then let them, what exactly
if they're
do you,
interested.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good one.
I sometimes will also preface that with like, then I'll point like where I live, because like you say you're creative and they're like, okay, he's poor. And then I go, well, you know, I live over there by the baseball stadium, by the golf
there
course.
You go.
And they're like, oh, well, he married well, which is also true.
Dude, that's so funny. Oh my God. There's so many things to, you ask that question and your mind triggers 18 different little things to cover, right? Like, you know, like, do I have to add location? Do I have to add this? Do I have like, but I think it's like having that, you know, the versatility to answer that question based on the person is great. But a lot of times you don't know who that
is. It's hard.
Yeah.
And I mean,
it's a good one to talk about.
It's the most loaded question, because it's like, what do you do for a living? And then it's like, well, how much of my insecurity do you want me to project onto you with this answer?
Totally. But I think I've learned how to answer the question by conversations just like this and having it with other people. And I think someone brought that up at a design conference once. We were all at the breakfast table the big round tables. Like, I think it was the Howe one that we went to in Chicago that time, Mikkel, years ago. And I remember sitting there and like total strangers. And again, like everyone's passing their business cards around. And we met this one guy that was like, his business card was White House graphic designer. Like, he was literally a graphic designer at the White House. And I was like, you have to hear other people's stories to kind of know how to answer your own.
Yeah. And if someone asks you, like, typically there is a follow-up. No one's like, what do you do? Okay, cool. See ya. Like, you know.
Yeah, bye.
No.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Do you guys remember your first entrepreneurial experience even as a kid? Did you do anything, talking, you know, those early years that showed a little entrepreneurial side?
Oh, yeah, dude.
What'd you do?
I was small town hustling all the time, man.
Yeah.
Like cutting people's firewood, mowing lawns, mistletoe and the fucking, you know, seasonal shit. Like, yeah, man. Me and my brother were out there hustling the streets pretty hard.
Yeah. How about you, Mikkel?
I can't think of a single damn.
Nothing.
I can't.
There's nothing.
Because this did not kick in for me until 08 when the economy took a little bit of a hit. And I thought, I just bought a condo. I'm single. How am I going to make this work?
Mm.
And it was scraping a little bit. But I was grown. I was on my own.
Yeah.
It was not like Kidville time frame at all.
No,
for me.
No, I was actually 22 when I was doing that. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? Lemonade stand just the other day. Maybe a craft beer stand. Now that would be really cool.
Like super illegal.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Jason, do you have anything you think of from the past?
I do. I actually this sparked a good memory. So like I said, I grew up in a rural area. Well, I had an uncle that would give me Mad magazines. And, you know, I cherish, like, I'm a hoarder of magazines. Like, I have old magazines that are just in perfect condition for some reason. They'll be valuable one day, I'm sure. But he would give me the Mad magazines, and I really didn't want anybody to, I didn't want to loan them to anybody or let them touch them. And so I would redraw the stuff out of Mad magazine, and then I would sell those. And this was like sixth grade. Wow. And it's how I honed a lot of my drawing skills, because I would have a demand for it, and then it got to where people would want like custom stuff, and so I would draw the pictures that I saw in there and give them new words and make my own jokes to like change teachers' names out for other names and things like that. And it got to where I had this whole economy basically from sixth grade to 12th grade where
Holy
I would
shit.
Draw pictures for people, and then it was like guys would come up and they would want me to draw a picture of their girlfriend for Valentine's Day, and so I was just like hustling drawings like from sixth grade all through school.
Wow.
That's so dope.
Love it was fun, too. It was fun.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
That's so cool.
I would say
and it was all because I didn't want them to touch my magazines.
There you go. Right. Yeah. It's like you're making a copy of it in a way. Like, those stay away.
Yeah. I'll translate it.
I think as a kid, I remember trying to do like the lemonade stand or something you were selling at the end of your driveway. Nothing, I wouldn't say, ever came out of anything. But the one thing I remember doing during school was I remember just going like, I have a Mac, I could do these things. Let me see. I would go to a local spot in our town that probably didn't have the best of takeout menus or whatever, and I'd grab one of their things. I'd redesign it, basically, in a really nice format, just cleaning it up a little bit. The next day, I'd show it, bring it to the owner, and be like, "I redid your takeout menu. If you like this, you know, it's $300, and then I could do all your changes and revisions." So, like, it was a way to try to start a business because I had the tool, and I just remember, you know, it was like so to me, it was so easy compared to like it before computer. Like, what would you have done? You know, like, this is the easiest way to do it. And I made a few. I remember making within a summer, I think I made like $1,200 just doing it. And it was the client relations. It was like describing the advantage of working with me. Like, why should you take this chance on me? But I felt that might be the best way to do it because you're doing all the work up front. Then
For
I realized
years you've been talking about this. You've been running that as a proposal portion of your business.
I still do that in some way.
Establishing the business itself officially for a long time.
Yeah, and there's a risk with it, obviously, because like but then what I got to the point was when I had five or six of them under my belt, then I just made a little brochure that was like, I can redo your takeout menu and make it look really good and really clean, and I would go after hours and I'd slide that in their mailboxes at these restaurants, you know. But you're right. I think there's that thing about like I got to show them the goods, and it's doing a little work for free. I still do that for the big, but that's like big dream clients that I definitely want to like work for. I think we all have a different opinion on that.
It would make me so nervous that they would hire somebody that is pretty standard or cheap and go, "Can you do this for us? Can you turn this over for us?"
Yeah.
And it was your work that you.
Oh, yeah.
But building that relationship, I mean, I don't know how many of my clients, they don't hire me because I'm so good. They hire me because they've got my phone number. I mean, and it's amazing. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I do with some of these big companies, it's just like they get out of a meeting and they're like, you know what? If I just call Jason, this thing will be done. Yep. And once you get that contact, I mean, you're in there.
That's the growth method, right? Like it's building those relationships. It's not even about skill. And I think, you know, again, circling back to like that entrepreneur versus freelance, where like you, in order to run a business, you have to have those like retaining clients in some form. It's really hard to always bring in new business nonstop. Mm-hmm. So like you can only really do that when you're like building those relationships and becoming that dependable person. And it's not even design. It's like, I'm quick on my email and I'm available is a big part of it too. You're like those aspects I think are what create the business side.
Yeah.
Versus just like I can illustrate, you know, or like I can make a logo. It's like that's a small percentage of like running the business.
I like how you said that, Matt. It's like if you call Jason, it's taken care of.
Yeah.
And that's really what you want someone to not only say about you, but to refer you to, you know, whatever it might be. And that's not luck. That was not you didn't get that comment from some luck of the draw. It was the work, it was the time, you know, all that stuff. Which is great. All right, last one. If you could offer a first-time entrepreneur one piece of advice only,
this
what would it be?
This is a great question.
Oh, shit.
Might have to think about it a little. I know, because I was trying to – I'm trying to think of how to sum up something, but does anybody want to tackle it first?
For me, like every day, almost every day, like yesterday, I lost a $11,000 job that I had. And it wasn't even like a proposal. It was just like a job I had that got canceled. And it wasn't because of any extraordinary measure. It's just they called and they're like, "Hey, we can't get the money after all." And so I was like, "Oh, you know." And an $11,000 swing. I don't care what business you're in. That's
major.
You know, I should have had a. Yeah. I should have got drunk last night. But
what was your? I want to know more about this. But do you recall your immediate raw response?
I'm conditioned now, but I've conditioned myself for to be numb to this stuff. And that's the thing. That's the advice is that if you want to celebrate the upswings, but you can't let the downswings like overcome that stuff. And and it is a roller coaster. On some days it's great, and on some days it's bad. And if you can't handle the thought, like if you're listening to this and you just gasp because $11,000, you know, like, oh my God, what would I do? Then you're probably not meant to work for yourself, because that's the kind of swings that happen on a regular basis. So the advice that I would say, and what keeps me motivated, is that there will always be more blank, and there will always be more money, there will always be more work, there will always be more struggle, more fun, more time off, more pain, more suffering, more opportunity, more clients, more friends, more roadblocks, more hurdles, more devastation. There'll be more of everything, and that's just what you have to like accept, is that this right here is not the way it's always going to be. It will be like this again, but it's going to be something different a little bit, and it's going to be something better, it's going to be something worse, but there will always be more blank. And if you just keep that in mind, it'll keep you sane, because a rock in your shoe, which is, you know, losing that job is a rock in my shoe, I'll get another one. You just have to keep that in mind, though. I crossed it off my Post-it note. I was like, well, I'm not doing this one. But I have 15 other things on my Post-it notes. And so I was just like, well, now I have more time for these things.
There you go.
Yep.
There will always be more blank. Good for you. That's my advice.
Yeah.
Dude, that's killer. I think so many, especially, you know, I'm filtering through design, but like, that was a huge fear for me, especially getting into freelancer, like taking the step away from, you know, maybe working for someone else. It's just like, I didn't know where that well, how deep it was, or like how to do things. But
it's deep.
But you know, but like it is, there is always more. Clients will reach out to you. People will network. Like, it's going to happen if you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Which sort of leads into like mine is like, you have to put yourself out there. Like you have to be available to opportunity. You have to be available for job. Like, you need to do the work. It's not just being a good designer or whatever your craft is. Like, you have to take the extra step to like get involved and be available to the community, to the industry, beyond the craft. And that's where I see most of the change happens, you know?
Yeah. Mikhail?
Years and years ago, I used to support a creative studio of her own that she was the owner of, and she was my mentor for years in a way, and it's how I met Wes.
Oh, cool.
And we were one of a handful of designers that supported her business. She actually was never in files. She just ran the show.
Yeah.
And she presented, and we would all join client calls and all that. And I thought, you know, I gotta be able to make it to where she's at someday. But amidst all those years of supporting her studio at the time as a graphic designer, in my background, for me, we would have, I guess you could call it a challenge, but it was a sketch.
Yeah.
And we would all share a sketch. And I didn't grow up, I don't have your guys' background. I never had a pamphlet of raw paper that I would just sketch whatever. I just didn't. I started, I hit the ground running digitally on my own. Well, this really forced it, and I really loved it. So I would love to be able to pick that up again or encourage others. Like, it may not be comfortable for you. You don't have the history. You never did this on the bus growing up.
Yeah.
But start it now. Just pick up anything and spend 30 minutes, just 30, 15 even. Just make it a part of your weekly, daily routine.
Yeah, your process too.
Because I'm paperless now.
Yeah.
I sync it with my phone. I jot down notes. I'm sending text messages to myself.
Yeah.
I'm in Trello on my mobile.
Dude, I'm all the so time. The opposite.
I know.
Every day.
I'm so analog.
I'm so worried I'm going to lose the piece of paper or the sticky note. So everything is digital and synced to all the devices.
I have so much paper around me at all time. I have,
dude.
It's an incredible amount.
It follows wherever you go too, right?
It's everywhere.
Four notebooks next to me at all times. And I probably have like 12 sticky notes for the week that I I don't think it's the right way. I think it's not.
No. I wouldn't say mine is either. And in fact, I would love to have a happy medium. That I obtain ongoing, But if forms of paper around me, they're bills or they're shit from the mail that I really should have put in recycling a long time ago. Everything is digital.
No, there is no calendar alert. I'm holding up a post-it note that says DGDC 3:30 Thursday.
I love it. I love it.
This is how I got here today.
And I rely so heavily on reminders and alerts and calendar. So heavily.
Yeah, I've gotten better with the calendar, but post-it notes are the best. You can't ignore them.
It's like, you know what? I kind of think that this, there's, I don't know, I'm going to call this out and hopefully it's not, doesn't make me a bitch. I think that a bit of this is a gender distinction. Jason, I'm married to a Jason. He refuses. He refuses to go full on digital. He's got notes all around his desk all the same. And I don't know. I talked to a lot of other partners that are female and they say the same thing, like everything is in their calendar. And I don't know, I hope I'm not that like control freak of a wife that I've got everything recorded to a
no there is no system. Right way you it's your own process, you know.
So yeah. I have, it's how we're wired.
But I have infinity of these field notes.
Mm-hmm.
I love those, but I don't even crack them open because I use these little yellow legal pads.
They're the best.
Look at this. I even have a little baby clipboard for my little.
Oh my god!
Aww.
I love it. No, little baby legal pad.
But like, I honestly use. I think I'm that same way. Where like, I have very nice like Moleskins, and I have like my nice field notes stack. I don't gravitate towards them immediately because they're for some reason it's more precious. Like,
I want to get a shitty design out there with anything.
Right. So like, I get this notebook here. It literally is just scribbles, and there's whatever's in there doesn't fucking matter. Like, if I need to write something down, it's in there. But when I start to get in, like, my field notes, like, I should be, like, drawing something that might end up on Instagram or some bullshit, right? Like,
I know.
I'm less free about it. So I have, like, my shitty notebooks that I use for everything, and then I have, like, my uncracked stack of, like, nicer notebooks.
Oh, yeah. I think we're almost there's a little bit of a it's hard to crack the good, new, pretty one open and start even just the first thing you enter in there, whereas a legal pad, or sometimes I even just buy those little spiral-bound ruled paper ones, like, right at the, like, perfect time to go buy it. They're in back-to-school specials everywhere right now, right?
Yeah.
I love those.
But the legal pad... You know, it's the least pressure.
Exactly.
Like, I can put anything on my legal pad, and it's safe. Like, it doesn't matter. I feel no pressure to make anything look good. It's literally just like, this is meant to be
A dumpster. I will totally admit, though, I have no way of, like, when I have to find something, it's going through every single one that's on my desk. I should be a little bit more, like, right now I started one the other day where anytime something has been sent out to be billed, like, before I forget, it goes in. I have a folder now or a little notepad based on every client, and I make that entry as fast as possible. So I'm literally forgetting to, like, wait, I got to bill something today or whatever it was. When you get into that frame of mind. So I'm trying to make those folders more organized, so at least I'm pulling the right folder knowing the information's going to be there, because typically it'd be like, wait, was it in this one? Was it the one here? Yeah. Did I leave it on the kitchen counter? I know. It's like, I'm a mess. And meanwhile, Jason's looking through his nine files of, I love it.
It's thousands.
That's
great. And this is such compelling podcast material talking about paper.
Yeah, no one can see anything.
But everyone knows.
No one can see any of this.
I bet you every
I think people
every form of us is being tapped into what people do themselves. I would say, I'll leave it at this. My advice thing is, think of it from this day on, your reputation. And it goes back to kind of like what you were saying, Jason. It's like, we all are, it's a given that we're going to be great or good designers. What people won't expect from you is great customer service, great communication, all the things that you want to be, build a good reputation down the road that will build you referrals, that will build you the client coming back, the client saying, you got to go with Jason. He's slam dunk.
It'll get done, right?
Yeah, like, and I think what that's a simple way of saying you have to have all your ducks in a row. You can't take this shit personal. You've got to build a business, and that's what you're running. You're not running a design studio. You're running a business first, and it just so happens to be selling design. You know,
that's right.
That's how I look at it, and it's hard. It's hard knocks. We've all learned that, but I wish someone told me that at the beginning. And that's why I tell every student is your reputation starts now. And trust me, it's a small freaking world. people know each other.
And it's never done, you know. It's not like, all right, I have a reputation that's good now. I don't need to ever work on it, ever.
Exactly. Polish it every day. Be like, yes, look at you. Well, that was our roundtable, and I think it's a great way to end it, man. This was like, I love these kind of conversations, Jason. It's like, this is what we thrive on 100%, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate y'all bringing me in on this, and I love, like, that's one of the things is I want to be an expert at something, and so whenever I get a chance to talk about the nuances of what we do, I love it, because I, other than that, I just sit here and wait for somebody to walk by or tell my cats this information, and, you know, because we all assume that everybody knows the stuff we know, but mm-hmm. until somebody asks you, you know, it's a lot of it just kind of lives in our heads, and it's hard to articulate. You know, it's hard to be at a poster show and tell a casual patron that's there to buy a poster. You know, it's like, I did this myself and I put it on Instagram. It's like, they don't care. You know, they're mm-hmm. there to buy their cousin's poster. And so it's I think it is helpful to kind of humanize a lot of this stuff, because you see things and you assume it was made by other people. It was made by the Darren Stevens on TV, not by the person that you know from the Creative Roundtable you get coffee mm-hmm. with every Friday. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more that we can kind of make stuff relatable, the more we can actually inspire younger people to try stuff, to do stuff, maybe God forbid fail a few times. And
grow the community.
And then one day we'll be old. We won't have to do our own poster shows. We can go to theirs.
That's the goal, man. Jason, I remember 15 years ago hearing your story.
yeah.
This is my poster story. I love it, dude. And so where can, again, we mentioned Jason the 29th at Instagram. That's your website as well, correct?
Yeah, and another piece of business advice, it's always really good to have a really confusing handle and website that you have to explain to people all the time.
Yeah,
that helps.
Make sure they're different.
Yeah. Intertwine numbers and letters like a license plate. It's really advantageous. I'm mostly an Instagram person. I do Instagram, and one thing that I try to do is if somebody reaches out and asks me a question, I try to answer them. And even if it's about pricing, if it's about how did you get this job, how did you do this, I try to be as honest as possible and try to be helpful. You know, I'm trying to combat years and years of being a curmudgeon-y, you know, guy that didn't want to help anybody. So I'm trying to make up for that.
There you go. Awesome. We'll hit them up if you guys got something out of this, for sure. I'm sure you'd love to hear from folks. Great conversation, man. Thanks again for joining us, man.
Thank y'all.